So, ladies and gentlemen, and perverts, and furries, and whatever cross-species folks, whatever. Come in. Ah, they are coming back. They are right on time for Kyle Mitchell's talk about biometrics in the bedroom, okay? So a big applause for Kyle Mitchell. And there's your microphone.
Okay. So, yeah. What you are seeing here, which may not last very long depending on how much it keeps crashing, is software that I actually wrote specifically for this presentation. What you are viewing right now is my biometrics as I am talking about biometrics. Whether you really want to introduce a situation that can involve software crashes to your sexual activities is a question you should really ask yourself before getting involved in this. But, yeah, so just to give you a quick overview of the software here, on top is my pulse, which the filtering is slightly off because I set my peak level too low, so it looks like I'm having a heart attack right now. And my GSR level, no, my hands actually are sweating that much. So, and then what you see down below is EEG levels. What I'm wearing right now is the NeuroSky Mindset. This just came out on the market a couple of weeks ago. It's $199 for the SDK. It's a low-count sensor EEG. So you put this on your brain, and it picks up the electrical signals on the surface. And so what you are seeing here is the raw EEG wave, the connection quality, which as long as it's 200, that means it's got a perfect connection. And then there's these attention and meditation levels that will change every so often. And that basically talks about how attentive I am or how meditative I am at the time. And then if one of you just happens to be into neurosurgery or neurobiology, you can actually watch my raw power levels here. So there's delta, theta, which reflects the thalamus region, low alpha, high alpha, low beta, high beta, low gamma, and mid gamma. So to actually explain what those are, if I start falling asleep, my delta levels will go up, and you will be able to see the theta levels go up as I approach sleep, because that's kind of as you're losing consciousness there. Low and high alpha, those tend to be a little bit more powerful when you're sort of in a resting state, not really thinking about anything, just sitting back, meditating. Low beta and high beta, those are actively thinking about something. And low and mid gamma, there's quite a few things that those are used for, quite a lot for looking at disorders. And one of the things I'll be doing is I'm actually recording all of this information, and you will be able to not only download the presentation slides, but the log of my biometrics from this presentation. Okay. From this presentation, assuming that doesn't keep happening. Which it probably will, but luckily it's easy to restart. So anyways, yeah, so if any of you want to download this information and take a look at it and tell me if I am epileptic or have a tumor, please do. So anyways, so what I do, I run a couple of websites. First off, there's Non-Polynomial Labs, which is my personal website where I put all my personal projects, things like that. The one that I'm really known for and the one that I'm sitting in front of you for is Slashdong. Slashdong, I started back in 2005. It's a site on sex and technology. And I cover sex toys, I cover sex interfaces, I cover whatever is new and interesting in sex and technology whenever I feel like writing about it, which really hasn't been the past year, but I'm getting better at it again. So yeah, I sit before you today wired up to my computer to talk about biometrics. Specifically, biometrics in the bedroom. What can we do with this equipment that I am wearing right now that I am sure all of you find so sexy to... This is the only room where those woos actually kind of make me feel a little bit uncomfortable because I'm kind of sure a couple of them are true. So, well, I kind of didn't plan on this whole having crap on my fingers and having to press buttons while holding a microphone thing. So first off, the slide everyone loves, the slide that you could read if it weren't in tiny print, the slide I copied from Wikipedia. Because it's just not a presentation these days unless you're reading a slide that was copied directly from Wikipedia. So this is Wikipedia's description of biometrics. Basically, there's a certain... Yeah, okay. Relaunch. Luckily, it comes up quick, and I may only have to do that every couple of slides. Okay, and there we are again. Wow. Okay, this happens a couple more times, and we may just have to go back to pictures. Which would be sad.
I mean, yesterday it worked like focusing on it, like as a group. Should we try that? Okay, let's focus on the presentation.
Okay. We are now back to the slides. Okay, yeah, it's gonna keep crashing. That's really odd. I gave this whole presentation this afternoon, it didn't do that once. Okay.
Oh well, it was worth a shot. Yeah, just a sec.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
Yes, I'm actually going to give my presentation using preview. Who needs Keynote when you have Zoom? Okay. Now, assuming Finder doesn't crash. So the parts of biometric equipment we look at, or at least the guy that wrote the Wikipedia article looks at, first off, uniqueness. What is it going to say about you when you put on whatever it is you're going to put on, or put your hand on, or your eye in front of, or your private parts in front of, whatever it is you're going to do that's going to hand you back a number? What is that going to look like to make it look like you, not make it look like someone else? The performance, how fast is it going to do it? The collectability, how easy is it going to do it? Or, well, this time, how hard is it going to do it may actually be a good metric. The permanence, which is this going to change? Is this something about you that in a week, a year, 5 years' time is not going to be part of you anymore, is going to look different? Like, say, the structure of your brain might look different between ages, but your fingerprints are probably going to look the same. And then we get to the fun parts, though. Acceptability, the degree of the approval of technology, which means what does it take to actually make the signal figure out that it's you, and how acceptable is it to the technology to say, what I am getting is a truthful signal about you? Circumvention, how hard is it to avoid whatever the hardware is taking. So think, for instance, lie detectors. People have figured out how to overcome lie detectors. And one of the big things now is, well, how can we tell that people are telling the truth? What hardware can we get that can say, this is not something that they're making up, this is not something they can control about their own body? And finally, universality, which is really, really important in the bedroom. If it's not going to work for everyone, then it's not probably going to work for most people. And if it's not going to work for most people, no one's going to buy it. And if no one's going to buy it, then no one's going to sell it. And if no one's going to sell it, no one's going to make it. So now that I've sucked all of the sex out of this presentation, why are we interested in this? There is so much about ourselves that we're still learning. I mean, neuroscience and the medical industry are constantly coming up with new innovations of, hey, we can now look at this signal and tell that you have this. We can now look at this signal and tell that you are going to turn into that or whatever else. We've never really looked at it in terms of sex much, though. There's been a little bit of information on biometrics and sex for arousal, but it's mostly been for very, I don't want to say nefarious means, but figuring out whether or not someone has urges that they don't want to have, or that they have some sort of mental incapacity, that or someone that feels that there is a mental incapacity that they should not have. Things like that used for biometrics and sexuality have sort of hurt the image of let's hook ourselves up to medical equipment and have sex. So why is it important, though? Well, if you look at how we deal with each other, I mean, think about, okay, so this top image up here, this guy is either dead or really enjoying having his pulse taken. And if you think about it, though, how close do you feel to someone else when you actually feel their pulse? You can actually feel the blood flowing through their veins, and that is what is driving them to be them, because if it wasn't happening, there would be no more them. And it's been used for centuries and centuries, too, as old stereotypical Asian guy image at the bottom says. It's been something that we've used for each other to figure out how we're feeling, figure out how we're doing, how we will be doing, since well before technology existed. It's how we run. The machine that is us uses these numbers and produces these numbers. So you're probably thinking, but wait, I'm a special snowflake. What does this say about me that there's this equipment that can identify me through something that my body is doing? And what it says is that there's a lot of fucking snowflakes out there, and we're trying to learn more about them. And we can really reduce all of those snowflakes to a certain set of numbers. And once you look at those numbers, we can pull things back out, like, are you aroused by snowflakes or equations or snowflakes and equations at the same time? Are you aroused by some other sort of actual pornography? Are you feeling aroused when you're kissing your partner? Are you feeling aroused when you are using a toy? And more importantly, do you want the toy to know that and react to that and be able to know what you are feeling and increase it or decrease it, make it last longer, make it last shorter? But really, you are not a special snowflake. And that moves us on to control. So control has been near and dear to my heart for many years. Any of you that have seen my talks through the past few years, I have quite a few slides that involve these two pictures right here. While they are blurry right now, because I figured they were going to be much smaller, because I figured my software was going to work, these are control panels for current teledildonic sex toys. The top one is for the HiJoy, the bottom is for the Simulate. I'm actually not sure if either of those toys still exists anymore, but these are how you control the toys. the top one is just your usual sliders and buttons. So if you want to make it go faster, you push the slider up. If you want to make it go slower, you bring the slider down. You're basically having sex with your mouse at that point, and you're doing this all the time, and it's not that sexy of a feeling. The bottom is a cockpit. Yeah, I've learned to give that one a minute to sink in. So it's the exact same thing. I mean, it's more sliders and buttons and everything else, but it's still sliders and buttons, and you're still doing this, and you're doing it to a spaceship, which some people may like, but really, I guess my paper next year might be on the viability of penis joysticks and control theory of space flight. But for now, it just seems like a bad idea. So what this is, though, in terms of machine control, is what we call open loop control. And really, it's not pure open loop control, because as you're watching it, you're getting more excited. And as you get more excited, that feedback goes into your hand and you change the control signal. But the problem is you get shaky because you're getting really excited. And really just try mousing around while masturbating sometime. And you'll really understand the issue there. Like, Fitt's law was not really thinking about orgasms. So an open loop control system means you put the stimulus in, it goes through, changes something, but there's no real feedback there. Most toys are this way because you set the knob and it just keeps going and going. And, So the problem is if I move the mouse, it's going to move the screen too. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just going to be paying for this all night long. don't ever write your own presentation software. So anyways, open loop control. Yeah, so you, like, take for instance a vibrator. You set the vibrator speed. No matter how excited you get, that vibrator is going to stay the same speed until you change the knob. The problem is you change the knob, your ability to control the vibrator decreases. So there's... you lose the accuracy of control there. What biometrics can give us is a closed loop control. And really, I just wanted a slide with synthetic jet actuators in it. But really, if you are changing the synthetic jet actuators, it might very well turn on the flow system. Now, when you introduce the flow system, there's probably going to be some noise too, because you're going to get pretty hot and heavy with it. And there might be some pressure transduction happening. So, I love Google Images so much. This is the first thing that came up when I looked at closed loop control, and it's like they knew what I was talking about. So the thing is, you take the information from the pressure transduction, and you feed that back into what's controlling it. So instead of having that little knob with nothing else, you have a little knob with a program attached that... that program can help you out a little bit and go, hey, you're really liking this. Maybe I should do it a little bit more. Or, hey, you're really liking this. But you put a timer on here that said you wanted to make it take 10 minutes longer, and it doesn't look that's going to do that anymore. So I'm going to actually scale it back for you a little bit. So that's what closed-loop control is. Closed-loop control is actually feeding back what happens when you put something into the loop back to the beginning. So it just keeps going and keeps going. For those of you that were... at the talk on Thursday with the Joystick. The Joystick, they actually were talking about closed loop control because as you, basically as you jack off with the Joystick, that causes more shooting on the screen, and more shooting on the screen causes more shooting for you, and when one shooting begets the other. That is closed loop control. Oh, yeah. So the Joystick is a band that you wear around your penis, and you wear a little ring, and it can tell how far the ring is from the band. And basically, and then there's little four buttons around it, so you can tilt your cock whichever way you want a video game to go. It's hooked, it simulates an Atari 2600 controller. So your dick basically becomes the joystick. And so you can tilt your dick whichever way you want your ship to go in Space Invaders, and then to actually hit the button and shoot, you move up and down once. There you go. So, and I'll have more more examples of video game augmentation and closed loop control later. So what's happened so far in closed loop control in terms of mainstream toys? So there's the Saucy, which is really the only toy with machine learning at the moment. The Saucy, it's put out by a company that did put out this really cool vibrator called the Joujou, which was basically like a vibrator that was an iPod, and it would store certain sequenced vibrations for you, and you could make them, and you could send them to your friends, and you could have like friends list of people that made vibrations. And the software for it was just beautiful. It was done by Soda Design. Unfortunately, it was also $450, and most people get really, really scared when you introduce sequencing to sex. Apparently, it failed. So this was their next try. Instead of having a software solution, It's all hardware, but you can turn it on a machine learning mode, which means there's built-in waveforms, so it's like one will be like on, then off, then on, then off, and then one might be on for twice the time, and then off for half of it or something like that. And you can say, okay, I kind of like that one, and then it'll move on to the next one, but it'll add that a bit of that waveform, the last one that you liked, to the next one. And so as you say, I kind of like this one, I didn't like this one so much, you actually can build a waveform that is suited specifically to you. So while this doesn't really have anything to do with biometrics, this still shows how you can use closed loop control in sex machines. But to drive the point home a little bit more, and so what you just saw me wearing a second ago before my software started crashing left and right, this is the Lightstone. I'll talk about it more in a minute. It takes Pulse and GSR. So what you could do with this, for instance, is hook the Lightstone to your computer. It takes your pulse. Pulse is a decent way of approximating sexual arousal, or at least the trip to orgasm, basically. Your heart rate is probably going to increase because you're going to need to pump more blood. So what you can do is hook the metrics that of your heart rate up to your fucking machine, and you can make it fun and useful and like get you off more, like say, okay, as my heart rate increases, go faster. Or you can turn it into sort of a situation BDSM setup where you say your pulse has to stay under a certain rate for the machine to even be on at all. And if you get too excited, it'll turn itself off. And the thing is, it's not really something like that you can think about controlling too much when you're in this situation in either direction. You may want to be using it to make yourself, to give yourself a better experience and to get off faster, or you may really want that frustrating, it's not going to let me do it because I have to keep calm situation. It goes both ways. It's kind of interesting that way. So, what measurements can we take? First off, there's pulse. So I just explained pretty much what pulse gives you. And actually, I have notes here that I'm going off of. Pulse, I mean, that's, if you don't have a pulse, you aren't there. If you don't have a pulse, your blood's not moving through your body. There's not going to be any oxygen or blood getting to your genitals to engorge them the way they should be when you are sexually aroused. You're probably dead if you don't have a pulse. If you do have a pulse and it is working while you are having sex, it's probably going up. It's probably, it's not going to be the best way of saying, yes, I'm having an orgasm now, but every little bit of data we can get here helps. GSR, galvanic skin resistance. This is basically how much your fingers are sweating. Now, a lot of people are like, having clammy palms, what does that tell anyone about me? This is actually used quite a bit in lie detection. In polygraphs, this is one of the sensors that's on a polygraph, because when your fingers are sweating more, when you're lying, your fingers tend to be sweating more. You tend to, just due to the way that the skin works and the way that your body temperature works. So there's certain things you can tell about heightened levels of arousal, heightened levels of attention, just by putting sensors on your fingers. Muscle contraction. Now, muscle contraction is a big one, both for machine control and machine building. Anyone that has tried to build a fucking machine out of a small motor has probably learned the issues of female muscle contraction at orgasm. They will crush your machine. I'm looking at you, Alan. There are certain torque levels a machine has to be able to put out in order to overcome female muscle contraction at orgasm. So obviously, that is a very good metric to have. Same way with both male and female anal muscles. During sex, like basically this whole region down here ends up contracting quite a bit. So having the data of, okay, the muscles are contracting at this time this much with this much power is a good thing to know, and not only that, the more power you can contract with, the more you're probably going to pleasure the other person involved, assuming there is another person involved. That's why, like, the image that I have here is of a Kegel sizer for pelvic floor exercising for women. And that's, I mean, this one was actually made for pregnant women, but it's also used a lot for sexual health. Plasmography. Plasmography is kind of crazy. This has to do with the volume of organs in relation to blood flow. So probably the most interesting and yet really, really creepy version or creepy usage of this sensor is with pedophiles. This is not actually court admissible data, but one of the ways that was somewhat popular for finding whether people were turned on by pornography they shouldn't be was to put a plasmograph on a penile plasmograph on them. And what this does is measures how, if and when your penis starts engorging with blood and you get an erection, and it gives you very strict numbers on even the slightest amount of that. So that, and that is figured to be used as an arousal level. Now, there's a lot of physical things that could make that happen too. It's not the best thing in the world for saying, okay, I'm going to convict someone of a crime because of data that I've gotten from this. But it's still interesting, especially for permissive sexual situations that you actually want to be having and are not law enforcement based, unless you're into that. So yeah, but the plasmograph, there's also vaginal plasmographs too, which do the same thing for the vagina in terms of how much blood is flowing, how engorged. Plasmographs are really how engorged is the organ. Temperature. Temperature and thermography are huge these days. Since we can get so much information with IR cameras, it's really become a great way to say you are or are not aroused. Because as you become aroused, as I've said multiple times now, more blood flows to the region. As more blood flows to the region, the temperature of that region goes up. And this is a great way to see, okay, if there's some sort of sexual dysfunction, then you need to be able to see the blood flow. It's kind of hard to actually be able to see blood flow and turn someone on at the same time in an intrusive way. So the great thing about thermography and IR cameras is that you can sit them outside and have them look at people and still get great temperature information. The Tantra talk earlier was a wonderful, wonderful show of this because you could actually see the temperature of the people and how their bodies changed and the mapping of the temperature to where they were touching each other, how they were interacting, how it was covering their whole body versus just a genital area. Really anyone that has had a problem with like using thermography to figure out things about sex, I really invite you to go fuck yourself in front of an IR camera, and it will tell you so much. EEG. So this is what I was trying to show you earlier. I will have this around Noise Bridge tomorrow too, if anyone wants to check it out. They like this talk. So EEG is, think about trying to diagnose a car from 50 feet away by the sound of turning the engine on while facing the opposite direction from the car. That's basically what this gives you. you still know there's a car there, and you still know it's kind of doing car things, but it's not exactly looking under the hood because there's this big wall between you and the insides called your skull. And while there is deep sensor EEG that you can put needles through your skull basically and get in there and really figure out what the signals are, I don't think that's going to be on the consumer market for at least another year. So for now, we're stuck with this. But there's so much that we can tell from EEG. Now, usually most people are thinking, oh, hey, I can see whether I have epilepsy or Jakob-Creutzfeldt disease or something like that. And even after searching the internet, I could not find anyone that was getting off on that information. So I kind of had to look around a little bit more to figure out, okay, what can we do with sex in the EEG? And honestly, I'm still kind of trying to figure that out. In terms of what does your brain look like when you're having sex? And really, what can we do with that information? I don't have a very good good answer to that at the moment. But it looks like there's someone that does.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, damn it. I really wish my software worked then. So that was kind of the idea behind this talk. So apparently there was a article in Discover about teledildonic EEGs where a couple has a toy on both sides and they're some geographic distance apart. And watching each other's brainwave activity actually caused some sort of stimulation. That's really interesting, because I have been staring at this stuff for a week now, and it still looks like lines to me, but we'll get there. So now an idea of what hardware is out there for you to use. What is out there right now that you can go and pick up and go have sex with? Or, with it on. I don't know if you'd actually want to have any sex with this. So first off, yeah, the Lightstone. Man, this thing is crazy. There's a game called The Journey to Wild Divine. Sort of a Deepak Chopra type thing where you put this on and there's this game that you play and it's made to teach you how to relax. It takes your heart rate and GSR, pulse is going through blood ox. So it's just figuring out, okay, are your oxygen levels stabilizing? Are you not sweating as much? Okay, if that is happening, this ball comes out of this fountain on the screen, and then there's some glitter around it, and suddenly you're relaxing. You can still, I'm not sure if they're still selling it anymore. You can find these on Craigslist for like $80, if not cheaper now. Game used to be like $200. But this was the only controller for it. All you would do is just sit there and relax, and it would teach you how to relax. And the cool thing about that is, the fun thing about computers is they are much harder to teach than we are. So what a lot of people do with biometrics and computers, like say you're trying to learn to relax or something like that, what it teaches you to do is get in the state that you made the game progress in. Like it can't really tell you, okay, you need to do this and this and this, but it can let you through at a certain point. And once you've gotten through that certain point enough times, you can reenact that somewhere else. So really, at that point, the computer's programming you, but it's a hell of a lot easier to do that than to program the computer. So it's a great engineering solution. The next thing, more heart rate stuff. Polar hardware. This is for any of the DIYers in the audience, really. Polar hardware, very hackable. SparkFun continually sells out of their heart rate board that talks to the Polar hardware. You can pick up the watch at like REI or whatever else and then get the board to talk to your Arduino or hacking platform of choice. Muscle pressure. So I talked a little bit about the pelvic floor exercisers before. These have actually been a huge area of hacking on the internet. There's a lot of people that have come up with pelvic floor exercisers and certain types of inflatable plugs that they've hooked up to some sort of data aggregation hardware, like this one's hooked up to a USB jack. And not only can you get the computer to possibly inflate the toy for you, you can hand it back information on the pressure that you're squeezing the toy with, and therefore you can actually have your own muscle pressure sensor, which is, once again, really interesting to have in terms of how close am I getting to orgasm, how much am I clenching, what force can I clench with. Let's see, what's next? EEG. So these are the two consumer EEG helmets that have literally come out in the past 2 weeks. These have been in development for 4 or 5 years, and this month apparently is, let's release our EEG month. So this one is the NeuroSky. Like I said, $299, made to just slip on and go for the EEG user in a hurry. Communicates over Bluetooth and sends an attention and meditation level, as well as a raw data signal, just in case you really want to do your own DSP, like I know we all do. And it also does the breakdown of EEG wave levels for you. What that gets you right now is really a bunch of data. All of their drivers are open to the point of being usable on a microcontroller. It's actually kind of cool how open they are with their information. But there's been literally no software outside of what they've written for it yet. So it is ripe for the taking. The other one over here, the big bicycle helmety type thing, is the emotive helmet. Same basic idea, though they're going with more sensors. Usually in EEGs, you have either 21 sensors or 75 sensors if it's a really nice medical one. The way the NeuroSky works, they just want to pick up very certain things about attention and meditation in the alpha and beta waves. So they can go with fewer sensors. The emotive is made to do interesting things like game control with your brain. So last time that I saw emotive, they were showing it with a Harry Potter game. And what you could do is you still moved Harry with the joystick, but when you to cast a spell, you actually had to think. So you'd be like sitting there and you'd move him and there'd be an enemy and then it's like, okay, I need to cast Fireball. And assuming you didn't pee a little at that point. And the funny thing is though, I mean, you can't just think Fireball. It's not that smart. The signals on the surface of your brain are not quite that informative. But what it does is it comes with a training program, and you stare at this cube. And the longer you stare at the cube, you finally move it, and it moves left a little bit. And the thing is, once again, that's the machine training you. Because at that point, you're like, oh, I thought this way, and it moved left. That must mean left. I'm going to do that from now on. Evolution is a wonderful thing, and thank God we have adaptivity like that. Because it makes life way easier on programmers. So that's sort of where EEG is going, but it's currently so new, especially on the consumer market, that I can't really tell you what's going to be happening with it yet. I mean, I certainly have my own plans, and I've already got some software written for doing waveform analysis and stuff, but I've had this literally 5 days. So I haven't had a lot of time other than to write my crashing presentation software. Okay, sadness over. And there's a million more different little things that you can use that have to do with your body that you could put into some sort of sexual context, I am sure. The reason I made this slide is because I've written drivers for two of the three things on this on this page. This is a blood pressure. On the top right there is a blood pressure monitor, and lower left is a pedometer. Both of which there are now open source cross platform drivers for, thanks to me getting bored. Once again, I tend to fall back to BDSM situations just because that's the easy answer for everything when you're building sex toys. Really, if you build for the BDSM community, they use everything, and if they don't, they know someone that does. So pretty much everything becomes valid at that point. So you can just say, well, you can use it in a slave situation where you want to keep some sort of certain metrics. And everyone that has a power fetish goes, ooh. Because, I mean, this, you can't get more personal than this outside of social context. Like, this is the insides of you tracked over time. And if someone else has control of that data and is doing something with it, well, that's pretty fucked up right there. And this thing on the lower right is called the Fitbit. This just came out like 2 weeks ago. It's a little accelerometer that you hook to yourself, and it can tell when you're sleeping. It can tell when you're awake. It cannot tell whether you are bad or good. It is just an accelerometer. Unless you are accelerating badly, in which case, there you go. But really what it can do is, so it can tell when you're sleeping by the way that you move. It can tell how far you've walked by the way, by the data that the accelerometer gives back. It's basically, it's a pedometer and then some. And then you can upload all your information to their site, and they'll hand it back to you in nifty graphs and everything else. So really what I've been showing here with all of this stuff is more... I realize there's not like a lot of concrete examples of you can use this and buy this and then go do this in your bedroom. The problem there is there's not a lot of people doing that yet. This talk is more about, hey, here's the hardware that's out there. Uh-oh. Yeah.
What about transcranial magnetic stimulation? Don't they have...
Are you talking galvanic vestibular? Or the transcranial stuff I'm not real familiar with. Oh.
What's transcranial?
Huh. So, I'll have to check that out. Yeah, apparently there is a transcranial magnetic stimulation. I'm familiar with galvanic vestibular stimulation. Basically, there's these things called the mastoid processes right behind your ears. And that's part of what regulates your balance. So, basically, when you start leaning to the right or to the left, there's a 2 milliamp current that goes one way or the other between the two mastoid processes. So you can actually induce a current between those two things and make someone lean slightly to the right or slightly to the left. There's a researcher at University of Tokyo, Masahiko Inami, just in case any of you are writing this down, that has done some really, really cool shit with it. He actually made a system called Gravity Jockey that synchronizes with music. So the BPM sends currents across the processes to the BPM of the techno, and it actually makes like your world dance in front of you. And once again, in terms of BDSM, because, God, that's my favorite example today, what about the power to make someone lean slightly to the left? Now I realize it's like, oh, wait, that's my right. Now, I realize that it doesn't really sound all that interesting, but everyone usually assumes they have control of their own balance. And when you lose control of something that you kind of use to stand up, that's pretty fucked up. So, yeah. So there you go. I will have more research to do when I get home. Knowledge is power. So aesthetics. What about the aesthetics of biometrics? Because usually, yeah, this is what we're used to. Now, there are some people, I know some people that would think this shit's real hot, either that have like security fetishes or that have biomedical fetishes or that have both. I mean, it's just anything you make, someone's going to find. The problem is, how do we aim down the middle? How do we, what would we do to put biometrics in the mainstream bedroom? How can I stop using this BDSM example? Because, it's easy. It's easy. What would make everyone want to use this stuff? And so I just put like a tiny bit of thought into this. And so there's a few more biomedical things, including actually this little box down here is the ET312B, the Rolls-Royce of electrostimulation. So really, if you want to shock yourself in the nuts, that's the place you go. So that is actually a sexual box, but it was obviously designed by a me. because it's all buttons and knobs and a little LED readout. And actually, just the image on the left over there, that is some sort of face electrostimulation thing for youth and age reduction. I just put it up there because it was a really funny picture. That is so beautiful. Yeah. So what can we do? I mean, there's a huge, area of development right now in conductive fabrics. What can we do with conductive fabrics to make some sort of interesting lingerie or underwear or something like that that shows your pulse on top of something sexy? So you can not only say, well, here I am and I'm sexy, I'm also aroused and there's some LEDs involved. There's a rave in my pants and everyone's invited. The cool thing is, I mean, there's been a lot of haute couture lately that's integrated machinery. Now, the skirt that I'm showing right here is actually, it's an art piece that is a skirt that turns into a chair when you flip a button. Basically, that's a big air pump on the back, and it just turns into a chair off your back. But the idea there is, though, it's still high fashion, and high fashion is now integrating technology. So we have ways of things that we consider beautiful, things that the mainstream considers beautiful and sexy, or things that fashion designers, which is a whole other world unto itself, considers sexy, is now integrating technology. So that's something that we can use to integrate into clothes in the bedroom, into figuring out what can we do to hook something to ourselves that will give us some data until we have that nanobot pill that hands it back to you over some sort of wireless protocol. So, ethics. Why the hell is there an ethics portion of this talk? Well, I've had some problems. Because, I mean, as you heard earlier, I have my whole opinion of no one being a special snowflake and everyone being that number. And the problem is, I mean, now I've gone over, okay, you're the snowflake, here's the hardware, this number comes out over here, be it pulse, be it EEG, be it whatever else. We're still reducing things down to a metric. And the problem is, when you do that, and the reason that I actually built that presentation software was that when you start getting into sexual activities that involve hardware, that involve software, that involve all of this stuff that can go wrong or be complex, you start getting into things that look like this. Now, I find this sexy as hell, but not a lot of other people are really into overly complex Maxim SP patches without segmented patch cords. Oh man, not one media artist in the audience tonight. That was my one Maxim SP joke. So you can build software and get so wrapped up in the software, so wrapped up in the hardware, that you forget that there's someone on the other end. And the problem is, I was like ranting and raving about these sort of interfaces on the internet on all sorts of fetish forums and stuff, and this is the reaction I got. Because you end up getting so wrapped up in the interface that you can, like I said, quite literally forget there is a person on the other end, and that can become quite dangerous when people start trusting the numbers. When people start feeling, okay, well, I've got a computer here. This computer is much faster than me at everything. I can do something that I wouldn't normally trust in order to pleasure this person, some sort of edge play, some sort of asphyxiation or whatever else, because I've got this number that the computer is giving me. That's a little bit too much trust. Because the problem is, while the computer is faster than you, stupidity is much faster than the computer. And that can hurt people, that can kill people. So while we're doing this, people are, I guess, special snowflakes. That's what ethics is about. I'm going to look at the European while I say that, because this is the last ethics slide I'm ever doing. And so the thing is, to actually build interfaces that only augment people with people, they don't override people and just say, you are a set of numbers, unless you really, really want to be that set of numbers and you know how to handle that. There's a really cool story in a book called The Cartography of Emotion, free book available online, called A Future Love Story, that's kind of about this. It's really cool. I'll have references to that up on my website after this talk. So now there would be a demo, except, well, I can make the demo crash again if anyone wants to see it. Okay, let's crash some software. How am I doing on time?
That's fine.
Okay. Okay.
It looks like a Sennheiser.
Yeah, it kind of does. Man, but the headphones are not very good. So yeah, this thing talks over Bluetooth to your computer or iPhone or whatever else you want.
I have a microphone.
Okay, I got it. Oh, wait, no, I do need you. It's...
Of course. Okay. So.
This is great. I get my own European mic stand.
And he's teaching at a university.
This is why you need to get your green card. okay, so starting everything up here, and don't crash. Okay, I can hold this now. So what you are seeing right now is an interface that actually has presentation slides down here. This was how I was going to give the presentation until it started crashing every 30 seconds. This is actually also an interface that I was looking at selling to kink.com for a while. The idea being that they're working a lot with what you could call objectification and dehumanization porn. If you look at the story, or the training of O, is that what it is? Any kink people here? Okay, I think it's the training of O. It's week-long session, week-long dom subs training sessions that are filmed and put out as a single suite of things. So really, if you surrounded a window of porn with all of this data, what would that make you think about it? I mean, it doesn't even have to be the real data, because it's going to crash. Okay, it doesn't even have to be the real data, because... I mean, it could be anything you want to inject in there, but the cool thing is knowing that there's something that that model cannot control that is showing, I mean, yeah, so you've got like a big gigantic machine or something that's fucking or whatever else, and you can hear her and you can see her, you can hear him and you can see him, but there's something so much more intimate to knowing, oh yeah, and this is what their brainwaves look like right now. This is what their body temperature is right now at these points. This is what their heart rate is right now. They really are or really aren't getting off on this, whatever else. Just make sure you test the software. Really, who would ever spend the money on Keynote now when you can do this? That would be why. Okay, so let's go back into where this could go. This is just one idea that I've had that, assuming I have time tomorrow and it's not going to be too annoying or whatever, I might actually implement this if I actually have everything around. So we talked earlier about the feedback loop of the Lightstone and a fucking machine. So the fun part comes in when you can start adding things to this loop at will. The software that I used to put that presentation together is a thing called MaximSP. It's the thing that also put this together. And the nice thing is, it's a programming language, but it's all boxes and lines, and data just flows through the boxes and lines, so it's very easy to add and subtract things at will. You could easily use it as a sexual experience programming language. I have a few data patches for control vibration control and things like that. I wrote my the Twitter dildonics thing that I did a couple of years ago, which was a vibrator controlled by Twitter. Was written through this. And the thing is, you can snap this into any data source that you want. There's this wonderful service called PaTube that is specifically for sensor data aggregation. So if you want your vibrator to go off based on the water level of a small town in Indiana, it's there. There's so much data that you can throw in easily at the click of a few buttons these days, as long as you have the internet, that you can have control over whatever you want. You just need to set up the control structure and whatever it is you like to do. So my idea for that, same idea here, except let's add Tetris. This is gonna take some explanation here, so pay attention. So this is a one person, possibly two person situation. There's a person hooked up to the fucking, there's a person on the fucking machine. I'm not really sure you can hook them up to it as much as, well, there's a person and a fucking machine, and they are doing the things that a person and a fucking machine do. And to that person is hooked to the light stone, so you have pulse and GSR also. So their pulse feeds into a Tetris game. But it feeds in a very interesting way, because the thing that you care about in Tetris game, the thing that you want most, is the long piece. Everyone wants the long piece. So what you can do is, another fun situation bondage thing here, the higher your pulse goes, the less your chance is of getting the long piece. And so this is still open loop control here. How do we close the loop? Well, the number of lines that you get controls the speed of the machine. So you could actually be sitting there with laptop in front of you, fucking machine in back, playing this yourself, and that is your control of the machine. It's sort of like, man, I hate to say it, because it's like kind of like Saw for sex, except, ew. but really, that's what it is. I mean, it's like there's some sort of situation that you have to figure out that takes you both farther out of and deeper into the sexual situation, because there's only so much control you have over those biometrics, once again. So, and if I have all the parts around tomorrow at Noise Bridge, who knows, this might actually happen. So, in terms of references, there's the book Emotional Cartography, which I forgot to put the URL of on here, but I will have it on my website. And there's a really, really interesting paper that was published at SIGCHI 2006, the Sexual Interactions Workshop there, called Master John, that is all about building biometric haptic feedback BDSM equipment with an eye on the aesthetics and fitting into the scene and everything else. It's a really, really interesting overview of what a designer would look at if he was designing something specifically to go into somewhere like Mr. S. That paper is also available on the net, also be available on my website. So with that, any questions?
I guess that's why this guy won last year's Ars Electronica Lifetime Award. So, Kyle Matulis. Any questions for dear Kyle? Okay.
Can you combine, say, a TENS box and your EEG and correlate evoked potentials to figure out how the stimulation gets through your brain?
Outside of the obvious isolation issues, because the problem with doing EEG versus and doing electrostim is your skin is a conductive surface. It's not an incredibly conductive surface, but it's conductive enough. So you would have to worry about noise introduction into the EEG. Outside of that, it's a completely valid idea. That's the thing about doing Like you want to get as much biometrics in as possible because you want as much data as possible, because out of all of that data, you can have the most fusion as possible to figure out, okay, this is what this situation is doing, and this is all of the data that I can look at, all of the data I can filter to actually turn it into something usable.
So, Kyle, that was awesome. But so in any software system, in any hardware system, in any system at all, actually, that is potentially dangerous, especially one that you definitely want to always work. Like when you started showing how things were hooked up, the example that my brain went to was like a file system driver. You want that to work, and it has to work. It's one of those reasons that those pieces of computers are the most tested software components that exist. So can you elaborate a little bit about what kind of safeguards or conditions of failure you might need to think about when you're designing something like this, either in software or hardware, and especially when you're beginning to mix the two?
Okay, so I mean, there's two situations here that we're talking about. There's, I guess, what I would call sexual grade and medical grade. sexual grade is, okay, your software crashes and your presentation doesn't work, or your software crashes and really, I mean, you're with another person and you go and you find something else to do, and well, you had a fun time together and you tried, and then you both cussed out the engineer that wrote the software and you both felt better and you had some angry software sex. Wow, I think I know what I'm going to be writing for like every bug report now. The problem is, though, I mean, then you get into the medical grade side of, that's when you have people that are like, well, I want to use this to like track some sort of edge play. I want to use this to like actually stimulate something. And I guess at that point, there's a lot of papers. You can actually look at exactly what the medical industry has done to check their hardware. I mean, there's a ton of papers about testing this sort of things, real-time systems, and I mean, that's, you're gonna want to be a biomedical engineer at that point. I mean, that's the thing. It's all the stuff that I'm presenting here is very DIY, very do-it-your-own risk. So, yeah, and going into medical a little bit more, though, one of the things that I guess I didn't really touch on here that I honestly should have is biometric control for the disabled is huge. A lot of people are like, well, I can just grab the knob and turn it. There's some people that can't. I work with a couple of people that write quite extensively on sex and the disabled. Corey Silverberg, amazing writer, amazing speaker about the subject. And every time that I talk about biometrics, like that's one of the first things that pops up is, how can we help the disabled to possibly include themselves more in a situation that was made for someone that's differently abled? But in terms of testing, yeah, I'm obviously not very good at it.
Okay, like maybe, okay.
So I can see on the software that there's levels for what you described as the delta and the, was it the theta? Is that what you said?
Delta, theta, alpha, beta, gamma.
And then you've got the attention level and the meditation level. Are you Are you calculating those based on the raw data?
So that's actually built into that's built into the chip here. That's one of the things that NeuroSky specifically sells as part of their product, is the ability to get this, what they call the e-sense signals, which is this attention level and meditation level. That actually happens on the chip in the headset. So just because we have enough geeks here, and I'll close on this because I'm sure someone's going to find some way to use this in a horrible way. What I have right here is the SDK. This is made for people that really want to write code for it. NeuroSky is actually marketing right now with Mattel. Their big sales point, and oh my god, it's going to be fucking huge, is the Jedi Mind Trainer.
Oh.
Yeah. So basically, you put on a helmet that has the exact same chip as this, their Think Gear chip, and you think, and there's like this ping pong ball on a lightsaber. And when you think and you get your attention and your meditation to the right level, The lightsaber glows and the ping pong ball blows upward. So I can. I'm still getting. Well, the problem is right now I'm generating a lot of noise because I'm talking. There's a lot of muscle, electrical muscle noise due to the fact that my jaw is moving, my neck is moving, I'm moving my hands everywhere. Like, usually you'd need to be kind of calm, which is why my levels are kind of low at the moment and why my EEG raw signal is just fucking nuts right now. If I could actually get that to... Okay, there we go. Okay, so, yeah, you can actually see me blinking here. Yeah, there's the in the raw waveform. Okay, and now I'm talking. And there I blinked again. Yeah, so you can actually see a lot of the facial movement because the electrical noise from your muscles hits the EEG and goes through. So you can also pick up like, oh, hey, you moved your lips, you moved your nose, you moved your eyebrows, you blinked, things like that. In terms of attention level, I can get that to go up by adding numbers in my head, I've found. Like, that's some sort of signal. Meditation I'm still working on, but like I said, I've only had it a few days. So, yeah.
Any more questions? No. Then I would say, like, give the man a hand or a head or whatever. So, just like a 4 or 5 minute break, and then we'll have our grand panel, the final panel with a couple of really great speakers here on stage in 5 minutes. You look scared.
No, my GSR was causing a divide by zero. That's what was crashing.
Oh. Oh, divide by zero. That's the best error ever. I mean, what?
No.